Welcome to the latest podcast from the Watercolors Aquarium Gallery. My name is Ben.
I'm Amy.
And I'm Charles.
Today we are going to be talking about, okay, argue with me, the most majestic group of fish on the planet.
It's hard to argue it when one of them literally has it as its name.
So we are talking about fish from the family Pomocentridae, otherwise known as the saltwater angelfish.
Yeah, when you proposed this group as the next group we were going to talk about, I was a little like, nobody wants to hear about saltwater angelfish. Nobody can keep saltwater angelfish. And that's probably part of why we need to talk about it. Because it sort of goes along with a lot of the stuff we've been talking about saltwater tanks being misunderstood these days. And it might be one of the more misunderstood groups of saltwater fish, too.
I think that's absolutely the right way to say it. They were one of the very first saltwater fish successfully bred in captivity.
Yeah, that definitely says something.
Yeah, Martin Moe successfully bred French angelfish in the late 70s.
Well, I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Did you know that, Charles?
I did. I was trying to remember a specific detail because I know that like a couple people within like a couple months of each other all figured it out at the same time. And then right. and then Martin was like, ha ha, beat you to it already. I'm trying to remember who the runner ups were and I can't. I know.
Yeah, I don't even know. I read some of Martin Moe's books and he referenced that. Breeding the Orca Daddy Back, I think, is Martin Moe's most famous saltwater fish breeding manual.
Yeah, that definitely puts it into better context for me to know that that's the same guy.
That's the same
guy.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. That's the same guy. And he's done lots and lots of other completely incredible, amazing contributions to the aquarium hobby. But one of them was he bred saltwater angelfish in the 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. So saltwater angelfish, I remember as a kid walking into stores and there was always at least one or two of the big saltwater angelfish for sale. And it's not something you see as often. And I think a lot of that has to do with the popularity of reef aquariums.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to keep live corals. And I don't blame them. I am a live coral person myself. And many, I would maybe even stretch into the most category of the saltwater angelfish are corallivores. Coral is on the menu for most of these fish.
Right.
With a few exceptions, although very few exceptions that you can
and
call
sort of loose exceptions.
Reef safe. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think though, like, sort of, it's good for us to have a disclaimer up top of why people should continue listening, either if they're just sort of vaguely interested in saltwater tanks, or if they have a reef tank and they wouldn't even consider most of these fish. But we've been talking a lot about lately, sort of designing your reef tank around the stuff that you want to keep. So I'm hoping that we can get into some of that with this discussion too.
I think this is a great discussion for people that are, you know, when it comes to setting up a reef aquarium, there's kind of two different categories of people. There are those people that are, I set up a reef tank because I love saltwater fish and I want a saltwater aquarium and corals and saltwater fish look great together.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people that set up an aquarium because they absolutely love coral and they know if they have some fish in the tank, it's better for the coral.
Right.
So this discussion is a little bit more geared towards the former as opposed to the latter.
Mm-hmm.
You can design a reef aquarium with live coral. Oh, here's a big way to say it. You can keep some types of live coral with any of the angelfish.
That is a big statement.
I know, right. I think that something is lacking a little bit with some of, you know, the Fowler tank, the fish only with live rock is like, if you want to keep big angelfish, you got to keep a Fowler tank. However, most of the pomacanthid and holacanthid angelfish are not going to eat other corals and mushrooms.
Right.
That would be the emperor angel group and the queen angel group.
Mm-hmm.
That's not their specific type species. Just, you know, those are the ones that
we'll get into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So okay, so there's a little bit of the introduction. So let's go through the 8 genera of angelfish briefly, and then we can get into a little bit more detail on them.
Yeah.
Okay. So Pomacanthus, Holacanthus, Pyglopides, Centropyge, Paracentropyge, Genacanthus, Chatodontopolis, and Aplomyctes.
I would have gotten 2 of those.
You know, we did pose... this is one of our lessons in nobody likes taxonomy as much as we do. Remember when we did our Black Friday trivia question? You would get... It was some crazy deal if you got the question right. And nobody could tell us a single genus of saltwater angelfish. I think it was just we were looking for any.
That could be right.
Yeah.
And I remember this specifically because we had like angelfish on the tag. So I was like, you could theoretically cheat and like...
Right.
Right. I would have even given it to somebody if they would have said, oh, let me go check. You're like, right. I would have been
fine with
that.
At least you could give somebody the meal. I know. Yeah.
Yeah, they couldn't guess. They couldn't. We didn't have anybody guess the genus of neon tetras either, though. So, yeah,
I got that.
It's Parachirodon, in case anyone's wondering. Sorry, side note. So, yeah, I know that I am a taxonomy geek, and an angelfish have always been like a huge draw for me. Always been a favorite for me. For a number of different reasons, and not just because they are, as we stated earlier, the most majestic group of fish in the world. Prove me wrong.
He's staring daggers at us, but neither of us are taking the bait. I literally cannot think of another one, like a better one.
Like, I'll admit, I don't have a particularly strong attachment to angelfishes as a group. I have gotten particularly strong attachments to individual angelfish that I've come across in my life. But I can't say that the specific term majestic is erroneous with this group.
No, can't think of any other group that fits the word better.
They are magnificent. They are intelligent. Mm-hmm. Most of them are incredibly beautiful. There's this one, there's one angelfish in Pomacanthus that's called the old woman or old lady angelfish or something like that. And it really is kind of a boring looking angel. It's a terrible name. It's a terrible name, but that is the common name of that angelfish.
That's so
funny.
I don't
remember if it's Pomacanthus or Holacanthus. I believe it is Pomacanthus. But I don't know.
I'm going to pull it up just so I can see.
Oh yeah, you got to take a look at it. It's only comparatively boring.
I know, because like... Just as a fish, it's still a beautiful fish, but like it's showing up next to pictures of like emperor angels,
emperor angel compared to that one. Yeah. So Pomacanthus is like the most famous of the group, I would say. And I bet if you would Google saltwater angelfish, the first picture that would show up would probably be a member of the Pomacanthus genus. And that includes the emperor angel and the Charon angel. And a whole bunch of, I don't know how many there are in the Pacific. In the Atlantic, it's the French and the Gray Angel. Those are the two there. And, okay, so here's my, yeah, we're going to talk about this genus for a little while because it's really cool.
Yeah.
They are, if you want to keep a mixed reef, don't keep Pomacanthid angelfish in your mixed reef. They will eat LPS corals and zoanthids. And anemones and all that stuff. They will probably leave leather corals and mushroom corals alone. And they will leave most of the SPS corals alone. Which you can make a pretty sweet tank with just those corals
and
big angelfish. I remember as a kid reading books about angelfish, and all of them said you can only keep one per tank. And then a couple of people said, let's find out why. So angelfish go through... Oh, we're going through the genuses. See, I'm going okay, let's do that. We'll go back because that really encompasses the rest. So the Pomacanthus, they are bigger than most.
Yeah, we might need to circle back to Pomacanthus in our like more general discussion because I think that that's going to beg a lot more than some of the other ones.
I think you're right. Thanks for keeping me focused. Okay, so then Homacanthus is the next genus, and they are similar in size and majesty to the Pomacanthid genus. There are just less of them. In the Caribbean, it's the blue and the queen. In the eastern Pacific, the passer is found, and the clarion. Oh, and the rock beauty also in the Atlantic. And then I believe there are one or two other less common species. Did you find out if the old woman was in Holacanthus or Pomacanthus?
Oh, I just looked up pictures.
Okay.
It's Pomacanthus.
Pomacanthus. Yeah. Okay, so the queen angel is by far the most famous in that
Sorry, the article title on Reef Builders is Old Woman Angelfish is the Rarest but Least Colorful Pomacanthus.
Rarest?
Like, yeah.
Yeah, that could be. That could be. Most of them are pretty readily available. So the queen, the blue, and the rock beauty in the Caribbean, and the passer, and the clarion in the eastern Pacific. I don't believe there are any Holacanthus angels in the western Pacific. I can't think of any. They're kind of concentrated in that area. A monotypic, or what's the word for if there are two of them in the genus?
I don't think there's a specific term for it.
Bi-typic.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, just logically. Right.
So Pyglopides, the genus Pyglopides, either is two species or one species, depending if you're a lumper or a splitter. And that's the regal angelfish, either the yellow belly or the white belly, with the yellow belly to some being simply the Red Sea variant and the white belly being the Central Pacific variant. Centropyge is probably the most commonly available genera in the reef aquarium hobby, and that includes all of the dwarf angelfish like flame angels and coral beauties, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on.
Yeah, those are genuinely like sometimes when we were talking about big families of fish, and you know, they're very distinctly different, but the dwarf angels, they're pretty much mini big angels. Like, they act similarly, right. They look just as beautiful, they just don't get big. So that's something that as aquarium keepers is kind of a blessing to us to be able to have.
Varying degrees of reef safeness, for lack of a better way to say it. Paracentropyge is a rather underrepresented genera or genus in the aquarium hobby, with a couple of very famous examples. The probably most expensive angel I know of is the peppermint angel. And that is in Paracentropyge.
Are those a dwarf? How big do they get?
Not very. They're okay. Definitely a dwarf. Yeah. I believe it's in the 4 or 5 inch range.
Yeah. I know the fish just because of its reputation.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're beautiful, but I always figure that they got big. I don't know why.
They're not big at all.
Okay.
From what I can find in the book, it's like 3.5 inches.
Wow. So that's like big. Coral beauty size.
Right. All right, so that's Centropyge, Paracentropyge. Genacanthus is fairly represented in the hobby. Many of the Genacanthus, I would say they are the Genacanthus genus is the genus that has the highest number of reef-safe angels. Most of them are zooplankton feeders, so they're not accustomed to picking at rocks. And swallowtails and the Belis angel are two of the famous ones in that genus. But there are a number of them. There's a lot of differentiation in males and females. Some of them are absolutely beautiful and then really very reef safe.
Yeah, those are a group that does look pretty distinctly different than the other angels to me.
Yes. And it's because their lifestyle is not around picking at rocks. All of the other angels, their lifestyle is evolved to, and their shape and their habits are, hey, let's pick at rocks to get food.
Right.
Genacanthus,
they've got
out of the water column.
Flat bottom so that they can orient right up to the rock, and pointy faces so they can scrape.
Exactly.
But these ones are more rounded.
Exactly. Yep. Chatodontoplus is the next genus, and that is not all that represented in the hobby. They are a little bit more challenging to keep than some of the other fish. Most of that is diet related. And then Aplomyctes is the last one in the genus, and the goldflake is probably the most common in that genus. The goldflake and the Singapore, those show up in the hobby sometimes, with the Singapore being an inexpensive version of an Aplomyctes.
And I don't know Angel, those at all. Yeah,
but it's not something, we don't get those guys in very often here, so these guys don't know too much about them. And that's probably the one that we're going to talk about the least today.
Yeah.
Simply because availability, and they're really not all that reef safe, and they're hard to get, and they're not as cool or pretty as some of the other ones in the genus.
Yeah, this, I mean, it's tough to be lumped in with some of those absolute show-stopping fish.
Right.
It's a lot to live up to.
They get upstaged pretty easily. Although Chetodontopolis, we need to delve into that genus a little bit more. There's some pretty cool fish in that group.
Let me see. Oh wow. Yeah, those are real. I Melanosoma is the one that came up initially, which is a pretty striking fish.
There are some amazing, yeah. Some absolutely amazing fish in that group.
Yeah, beautiful.
All right, so we're going to start with let's talk about the big angels for a while.
Yeah.
Right? Pomacanthus and Holacanthus. And one of the fun things to talk about with that group is the change that they go through.
Yeah.
A lot of cichlid keepers and people that keep wrasses are used to things that start out as juveniles and they grow and they change into something completely different. Pomacanthus and Holacanthus angels both grew through that. Like lots of things start out juveniles and they develop or change into something.
Yeah.
The color change that happens in those two genuses, in those two genera, it's pretty dramatic.
Yeah, it's extreme. It's like a completely different fish.
Right, right. The Pomacanthus genus, all of them start out life as cleaners. And one of the signals to other reef organisms that, hey, I am a cleaner fish, is I am a blue, black, and white fish. Right? Yeah. Cleaner wrasses is the most famous cleaner fish, blue, black, and white fish.
Right.
The cleaner goby in the Caribbean, blue, black, and white fish. That's what they do. They send that signal out saying, hey, I'm here to eat some dead skin off you, like check out the parasites, make sure you're looking good.
Yeah, it's like having the sign up in the window, right?
Exactly.
Open for business.
This is the car wash.
Yeah.
Right. And that's what the juveniles in that genus, that's what they do. Some of them are scribbles, some of them are in circles, some of them are half circles, some of them are lines, but all of them in the Pacific are blue, black, and white.
I think that coloration is what most hobbyists that come in, like most reef keepers that come in, associate with a lot of those fish.
It is striking.
Yeah, like the emperor angel, that's the image of that blue, black, and white swirling pattern is what comes to my mind, not the adult coloration, because you see adult fish of that so much more rarely.
Yeah.
See, I'm the exact opposite because I see the adults so rarely. Like, to me, the adult coloration's more desirable.
Yeah. I definitely, like, I don't think it's any less pretty, and you kind of get two really cool fish out of one right. For that.
Yeah. So one of the evolutionary biology has always been one of the fascinating things for me, and why things evolve certain color patterns and why they don't. That's just cool.
Yeah.
So in the
simultaneously across the globe, how does that happen?
How does that happen? In the Central Pacific, all of the juvenile angelfish in the genus Pomacanthus are that blue, black, and white pattern that we talked about.
Wow.
With the adults having all kinds of variation. In the Caribbean, the two Pomacanthus angelfish are the French and the gray angel, which are very similar, both as adults and as juveniles, with the French angel, for lack of a better way to say it, being a little prettier than the gray. The juvenile coloration of both of those fish is basically a black fish with very bold yellow stripes, vertical bars.
Right.
Right? So in the Caribbean, you've got vertical bars, yellow bars. In the Pacific, you've got the blue, black, and white pattern. There's this one crazy little angelfish, Pomacanthus zonopectus, the Cortez angel, found off the coast of Central America. That has both? It has both.
Huh.
As an adult, it really doesn't look like any of the angelfish. Right? It looks like an angelfish. It looks like a Pomacanthus angelfish. But it doesn't really look like a mix of the two. It doesn't look like the adult coloration doesn't relate any more than the adult coloration of a emperor to a six-line angel.
Right.
Right?
Just the juvenile one.
The juvenile is very distinct blue and white with yellow stripes.
That's very interesting.
Caribbean yellow stripes.
I guess you just split the difference.
It's the mix, but only the juvenile form.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, I would almost argue, because red and white is another one of those signifiers. A lot of cleaning invertebrates are red and white. But I wonder if the peppermint angel relates to that at all, too.
I think that has to do with the lack of red spectrum at depth.
Mm-hmm.
And so that red and white at depth is black and white.
That's true. But, like, so many of our invertebrate cleaners have that striped color pattern. There's even a hermit crab that's a cleaner that's red and white.
That's true.
Yeah, but when you get deep, actually, like, really deep,
right,
like a peppermint is...
Are they a deep water fish? I don't know. I know very little about the fish other than pictures I've seen of it.
I think the shallowest I've ever heard of one being found is like 400 feet.
So that's probably why they're so expensive.
That's why they're expensive.
Yeah.
I believe the last the last one I heard of sold, I think, so 4 years ago was the last time I heard about peppermint angelfish in the hobby. And at that point, there were two or three in the whole hobby.
Wow.
And the last one sold for something like $14,000 or something like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, but at that depth, red is actually kind of a camouflage because since there isn't red light penetrating that deep, there's nothing to reflect back.
Right, right.
That's why so many nocturnal fish are red.
Right.
Yep. Okay.
That's cool.
Pomacanthus, holacanthus, Pyglopides, we touched on, the regal angel.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that that was such a, I don't know, a small genus, like that was such a unique fish.
It's it. It was in Pomacanthus when it was first described. And then they realize that it's kind of its own thing.
Do you know why it doesn't sit in with any of the other genera?
I do not. I don't know what the
distinction,
the type species is for Pomacanthus or Holacanthus, and what puts Pyglopides in a different genus.
Hmm.
Right.
I'm sure they had their reasons.
Yeah. So we touched on Paracentropyge, which there's just a few of those, and there's the ones that are available, and there are a couple that are pretty regularly available, for some reason are extremely difficult to keep and have a low survivability. The peppermint angel actually is not that difficult to keep. Although here's the one fun thing about the $15,000 fish you want to keep in your tank. You want to keep the lights down low.
Yeah, and I would assume cold water too.
Cold-ish.
Like, I mean, not 78.
Right, right. Yeah, so it's the peppermint angel to me is it's more of a status.
Just like the black tang.
The black tang.
Yeah.
Yep.
Although the peppermint angel is just a genuinely beautiful fish in a way that the black tang is a cool fish, but it's not like the peppermint, which is kind of really noticeable and really unique.
Yeah, I think it could be easily argued that a Scopus tang is just a prettier black tang. Only common.
And not, yeah. Yeah, the peppermint, there is really nothing else that really looks like that, so sort of I get it.
The peppermint angel is...
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a whole bunch of people with black tangs out there that just went... Well, they may have just called me a bad name. It's very possible.
I'm sorry. The sorry. Gem tang, fantastic.
Gem tang, fantastic. Yeah. We're talking about angelfish,
I'm
Amy.
Sorry,
come
I'm
on.
Sorry. There is a comparison there that the peppermint is a little more worth the money to me than some of the other... like really status symbol fish.
Right. True story. It's always an interesting conversation to have with people about that fish is so pretty, it should be more expensive. Or, wow, that fish is really boring. Why is it so expensive? And the realization that expense of fish has absolutely nothing to do with how pretty it is. It is only about rarity. The black tang,
yeah,
an example of that.
Yeah.
So years ago, I was in one of the really cool, really high-end aquarium stores in downtown Chicago. And we were walking through, my wife and I were walking through the shop, and she pointed out an angelfish and said, why don't you have these in your shop? It's only $59.95. And I said, honey, look a little closer. She was not one decimal point off. She was two decimal points off.
Oh, no.
Wow. Yeah, no, that's why we don't have them here.
That's why we don't have them here. The price that they were asking for that angelfish is, if we carried that fish, that's what we would charge for that fish.
Well, right, and that's like, it's not us just arbitrarily saying this fish is super cool, we're gonna make it more expensive. It's just, that's what it takes to get it from there to here.
Right. Super rare, and that was a Hawaiian endemic. I can't imagine now what that angelfish would go for. That was before all the things shut down in Hawaii.
That's a major digression about fish cost, whatever.
We could probably do a whole podcast
on why do your fish cost what they do.
Ooh, I like
that would
that.
Be a good subject.
Yeah. Okay, Charles, get us back into focus. Yep. Talk about angelfish.
So earlier you touched on that, like, swallowtail angelfish actually have a different body type than other angelfish. And that is actually scientifically quantifiably true. angelfish, off the top of my head, are the only group of fish I know of that display the extremes of both body types that reef fish morphologically can be categorized into. So they can be categorized as... So think of like a pomacanthus. They are short... They are round, and they have well-developed pectoral fins. Most of their propulsion actually isn't from their tail fin. It's from their pectorals. Part of what that allows them to do is that allows them to do quick turns because their momentum-producing part of their body is closer to their center of mass.
Oh, right.
So they can turn easy. So like, oh, I got to pick this rock that's a millimeter over. They're capable of doing that.
Yeah, or directly above or below, or they can rotate like 360 degrees, really.
Yep. So then swallowtails are an example of the other end of that reef fish spectrum, where they're almost entirely propelled by their tail fin, which makes them very fast in a straight line, but it does not make them good at turning on a dime.
The forked tail is a classic example of this is fast.
Yep.
Interesting.
That's a great point.
But we're talking about different genera of angelfish.
I don't know. That's all I... Like, there's not too much else that I have to say about swallowtails. Maybe we should wrap them up while we're talking about them.
I think it's an underrepresented genera, and I think it's... Sorry, underrepresented genus.
I know. We've been swapping those like crazy today. Right. I've been doing the same thing.
I'm secretly, like, dying inside, but I'm just letting it go.
I know. It's just...
At least we're saying genera instead of genuses.
Yes. So I can accept it.
Genii.
Oh, genii. Right.
But yeah, we've had them in a couple of times, but it's just not something that people know about. I think if they did, more people would be interested in them.
We need to try more, I think.
Yeah, maybe we got to start pushing them.
Yeah. Centripetes is by far the most represented genus in the hobby. In the reef hobby.
Definitely.
With some strong, the flame angel and the coral beauty being...
Oh,
like
for great reasons.
Staples.
Yeah. The pygmy angel, too, is a centripage, right? Or is that a para?
Nope, that's centripage.
The pygmy angel is probably my favorite, just because they're, like, weird, at least in this genus, they're weirdly spunky for their size.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I would almost consider them a little bit pushier than like a coral beauty or a flame bag.
That is a ton of personality packed into an inch and a half.
Well, when I mentioned that they have, like, they are basically mini big angels, that's the most extreme example of that, because they do have such a similar personality to even, I mean, we've got a 12-inch Koran angel in the store right now, and it acts pretty similar to a pygmy angel, you know? Yeah. And those fish are 2 inches long. It's awesome.
We got in one of those like pygmy angels last week, and I like picked up the bag and I was like, yes!
They're so cute.
So the genus Centripetes is a really good example of learning about complexes in groups of fish. And the genus consists of, I believe it's 5 different complexes that all have a certain group of fish within that complex that all behave fairly similarly. And you can help that with the big question that we all have with angelfish is, can I put that in my reef tank? Some of the complexes are very much, don't put that in your reef tank. And the complex that includes lemon peels and bicolors and, darn it, all of the, should have put some more of these on. There's other ones in that complex that they're way more likely to chew on corals than the complex that includes flame angels, which right. that complex is flame angels, coral beauties, shepherds, potters. I believe there's one other in that complex. They're less likely to chew on corals. So the big question, is this angelfish reef safe? Well, no.
Yeah.
But how bad do you want it?
Right.
That's kind of the way you have to think about those fish, right?
I mean, I'm never going to answer that question. And with any sort of... Did you give us a word for that? With any sort of fish that's oriented towards rocks, I'm never going to tell you, yes, always, absolutely.
We use the example regularly that every once in a while you'll see a yellow tang that picks at duanthus.
Sure, I've heard
it's
of it, yeah.
It's extremely rare.
Right.
Right?
Well, and like with saltwater fish in general, I am completely uncomfortable when someone asks me, is this reef safe or is this not reef safe? Because, I mean, most freshwater fish we keep in the hobby are some sort of shoaling or schooling fish. So there's an evolutionary incentive to behaving similarly. It's not really the case with reef fish. And so they have a swath of personality. Like, we have two Caron angels, and they're very different from
yes.
each other. One is very outgoing, very brave, and the other one, he's outgoing, but he's definitely bashful.
And that's mm-hmm. the 12-inch one.
Right, yeah. That's the bigger one.
Yeah.
And so, like, when there's that much personality, and it's even been quantified scientifically that certain fish have, like, this is their favorite food, and that's not the true for all the fish of the species.
They don't right. read the book.
Yeah, individualism, there is some, like, evolutionary advantage to that, particularly on a reef.
Right. A coral beauty is often considered the most reef-safe of the angelfish group.
Yeah.
And I think there's some merit to that statement, as long as you're using the term most reef-safe.
Right.
Not saying it won't hurt your corals. Every once in a while, you get one that's just... And sometimes unexpected corals.
Right.
I think some safe generalities with the genus are if you have a tank full of all kinds of favorite LPS corals that are not in the Euphelia group, you might have some risk putting anything in the Centrobiges genus. A coral beauty would be your safest bet. Or an Atlantic pygmy angel would be a pretty safe bet. The rest of the genus, maybe not as safe. But I keep using those, like, I'm trying
right.
to come up with, like, how do you define...
You just can't. You can't say there's no absolutes because... And part of it, I think, with angelfish is because they're so intelligent.
Yeah.
Like, they're going to figure out what they want to figure out, and you can't control that.
An excellent example of intelligence in angelfish is illustrated by a totally different fish in a totally different group, the mimic tang.
Mm.
So mimic tangs, which is, I got to try to shift my brain into tangs here.
The chocolate tang.
Acanthoris papyrus is
yes.
the mimic tang. And also called the chocolate tang. The chocolate tang or mimic tang has four or five different color variations in its juvenile form. And all of them mimic a centropyge angelfish. To an extent that sometimes you can't tell. Like there's one that mimics an angelfish called centropyge eblei. And the chocolate tang that mimics eblei, the color pattern is exactly the same. The shape is exactly the same. You gotta look at the face and look at, it's a little smoother.
The eblei version of the chocolate or the mimic tang is like, you can't tell the difference because it's very
oh, right.
exactly the same. Like
gray and
there's
black with orange
nothing
dribbles.
Else that really looks like that
right.
other than those two exact things.
There's a notable lemon peel mimic, a notable eblei mimic.
That's a tongue twister.
Eblei mimic. Lemon peel eblei. Heralds. I feel like there's one more mimic out there with the perfect thing. So anyway, the whole point of that statement is lots of studies have been done onto why. There's got to be a reason and an advantage to mimicking some other organism. The best anyone can come up with is because angels are smarter and tangs are dumb. So the confusion that could give to a potential predator that, oh, there's an angelfish. I shouldn't bother trying to chase it down and eat it because it's smart. I can't catch it. Right. Whereas if it's a juvenile tang, meh, hey, I got a shot at that.
Yeah.
It's the best anyone can come up with. That.
I mean, just the fact of the matter that you could say angelfish are smart and tangs are dumb and no one here, like, no one had any argument to that.
Y'all knew exactly what I was talking about.
Tangs, as much as I love them, they're pretty much like the cows of the ocean.
The caricature of the blue tang, I'm not going to mention any names, but that was really accurate.
Yeah, I've seen there's some angels, they're so smart. And they're a fish that really, like, looks at you and is trying to figure you out.
They're problem solvers.
Yeah.
But then I'll have, like, a tang looking at me, and I can just picture it being like, wait, what?
Do you have food or what? Yeah. That's part of why having them is so rewarding, because you do have to kind of earn their trust, and they have to sort of figure you out and, like, know that you're okay.
That's a lot of the draw with angels.
Yeah, and man, those centripedes, those dwarf angels. I'm not a person who's drawn to big reef fish.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if I were to set up a tank for big angels, it'd probably be like a 500 gallons plus that I'm not even going to think about. Just because that's sort of how I keep tanks.
That's how you'd want to do it.
I like a lot of water volume compared to how many fish I have.
Yep.
But when I have a couple of $1,000 to throw at a big reef system, a lemon peel angel will definitely be in it.
Yes, they're so cool.
Yeah, and really all I want to keep for corals are soft corals and maybe some NPS if I'm brave enough.
Yeah, you can do that.
Yeah,
you
can, I know.
Mushrooms. Yeah. Mushrooms too.
Yeah, so that's on that list. But if you're planning your tank out before you start, even some of the quote-unquote non-reef-safe angels, if you plan around them, the lemon peel is not going to have an issue with pretty much most soft corals. And I'm not drawn to LPS that much. I like my soft corals. They're easy. You know, it'll be a fun tank.
I just had a thought, and this isn't really, like, related to this conversation specifically, but it just pertains to the idea that, like, a lot of the reef safe fish we keep are actually not reef fish, and that's why they're reef safe, because they don't know what to do with that. And then most of the, like, fish that off the top of my head that are like, oh, you'd see on a reef, they're quote unquote not reef safe because
that's why they're there.
yeah
it's tangentially related to the discussion of angelfish, but the healthiest Moorish idol I have ever seen was in a tank full of corals.
That doesn't surprise me.
Because they eat corals. But it was a tank full of coral in a public aquarium, right? A huge tank full of corals with a healthy, fat Moorish idol. I've never seen that in a home aquarium because you wouldn't keep them with corals, and that's what they want to eat.
Yeah. That's something we haven't figured out yet, is how to properly keep a Moorish idol.
Yeah. How to properly keep corallivores in general, I would say.
But Amy, we're talking about angelfish.
It's right next to angelfish.
I agree. Is it an angel? But, is it a tang? Is it somewhere in between?
But if we can figure out that question, then that unlocks so many fantastic fish.
It does.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean we can still keep them with live coral.
Right.
Just some live coral.
Right.
We get asked that question on a pretty regular basis. Like, hey, can I keep this fish with this thing it likes to eat if I just feed it enough? No. The answer is no.
Not if you're not willing to lose any of those things.
Right.
I keep shrimp in my puffer tank. I have a pretty healthy colony that stays at a round 10.
All right.
And so not more than that.
You make a good point.
Because there's a single puffer, it's 20 gallons, and there's a million hiding places. Corals can't hide.
I guess, you know, the way that you relate that to the discussion is there are some angels that may occasionally nip at some corals and not destroy the population.
Right.
And if you have big enough populations or big enough colonies of corals, if there's some nipping that happens, not that big a deal.
Exactly. I would argue that you could not keep enough corals in a tank and grow them fast enough to keep a corallivore. I would say that's almost not possible unless you have an infinitely sized tank, because a reef is huge and they graze pretty far.
I think it depends on the corallivore.
Yeah, an obligate. If that's the only thing it eats, that's really what I meant. Something that just picks, I think you could do it.
Yep, I completely agree.
Yeah, I don't know. See, a lot of the time when I hear people talking about like, oh, I'm really mad at this fish because it's eating this coral.
Yeah.
Like in the back of my head, I'm picturing like you put someone's favorite cake in the fridge and then you're mad at them for eating it. Like,
right.
Like
on their birthday.
Like, come on. Like, how can you?
Like, what did you expect? Yeah.
It's just what they do, man.
Well, it was so mean. It just wouldn't stop eating it. And I was like, no, that fish.
That's not mean.
No, it's food.
Did you leave that cake alone? No. And I think that's the thing that really you got to get down to. Like for me with angelfishes and stuff like that, is that you have to accept that you're keeping an angelfish, not something else. You know, like
yeah, you can't train that out of them. You've just got to figure out how to keep them in, despite that, if you want them.
And they deserve to be a focus.
I think they do.
Yeah. If you want an angelfish, keep an angelfish. If you want a fish that will get along well with whatever you have, get something else. Like, you know what I mean?
So that compatibility thing is that brings up a really good next point. And if you read some of the older literature on angelfish, so much of it talks about one per tank. No pairs, no different types of angelfish together, mm-hmm. none of that. Just one angelfish per tank. And I think that all is a reflection on the way that we used to set up aquariums. And the way that we used to do it was, this is back before live rock was a thing and back before live sand was a thing, and where cycling a saltwater aquarium was extremely, extremely challenging. So the way that you did it was you would set up this aquarium and you would, of course, start with a damselfish. And you would keep a damselfish in that tank for 3 months, and then you would put in one other fish. And you'd keep that one other fish in that tank for 3 months, and then you would add one other fish. And that's how you would build the population so that the filtration would keep up with the bioload.
Yeah, and I probably would have given up before the second fish.
Right. I remember like Tropical Fish Hobbyists, and I think it was an issue in like 2006 or 7, and it postulated that like we should be experimenting with keeping pairs of tangs and angels and stuff. And I remember at the time being like, wow, that is so like edgy.
Well, that's exactly where I was going with that point, that angelfish all go through a transitional phase. They are all born female, and the toughest, most aggressive one turns into a male, and males are extremely territorial, and it's extremely difficult to get them to pair up once they are established as males. So of course, if you set up your aquarium and you put in a single angelfish and you keep it all by itself for 3 months, it is the biggest, toughest angelfish in the group. It's going to turn into a male, and that's its territory.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add something to it, of course it's going to be aggressive and kill whatever you put with it.
It's just mean,
right? What developed was an understanding that the problem was the order in which the fish were being added, not the fish themselves. When you dive, many angelfish form established pair bonds, and you see them swimming together constantly and staying together as pairs, and that kind of started the discussion around, all right, so maybe we're doing this wrong. So fortunately with angels, almost all of them are fairly sexually dimorphic. And the big tell for an angelfish is this big old spine all of them have on their cheek. And on a male in any of the angels, it is super noticeable if it's a male. And if it's a female, it's this, or a juvenile, or an undeveloped juvenile, it's this little bitty pokey thing. It's not that big of a deal. But if you see the big old spike on it, it is unquestionable. Oh, I see what you're talking about. That is a male.
I say this all the time and nobody laughs. It's really easy to tell the males, but you can't tell the females.
That's really the right way to say it, yeah.
So would this hold true for like a pomacanthus? Like I've never looked for it in a big angel.
Yeah, for sure. All of them.
Huh.
Even a older but still juvenile phase pomacanthus. That's when the males start to develop that spike.
So here's a question, since we're talking about angelfish generally as well. What is the purpose, what is the benefit of a spine on the cheek? Like, do they
battle with other males?
Do they don't like lip lock fight like that. So I guess it's just like they just jam their faces against each other. I've never seen angelfish fight. Every two angels I've ever put together paired.
So if you put tanks together and you see them fight, you see them bumping their tails together.
Yeah.
Like angelfish bump their heads together.
They just smash. I didn't know if there was some sort of like things are likely to come out from rocks at them or something like that. That's no, just their sparring behavior.
It's the horn on a ram.
Mm, okay.
Spike on the angel. That is what that is there.
And
for.
I'm sure it's very sexy to the ladies as well.
Yeah. I'm just picturing like two, like a female, like watching two males be like, 1, 2, 3, 4, I declare a thumb war. And she's like, oh yeah, this is great.
That's so fun.
Matt Patterson, saltwater fish breeder extraordinaire, was working on trying to pair holacanthus angels. And he got juveniles that had small spines to try and figure out how to pair them together. And he spent a lot of time. There's an article in, I believe it is in Coral Magazine, about him doing this. And he set up these 5-gallon buckets with dividers in them. He used egg crate dividers that were hooked up to a big system and put angels in those divided compartments inside the 5-gallon buckets to see if he could get them to get along without killing each other, right? They could see each other, but they couldn't hurt each other.
Right.
And the way he describes it is the next morning he woke up and his dividers did not work.
And it was dividers never did.
And queen angels, right?
Yeah.
The dividers didn't work and the juvenile angels were like, what's up, buddy? Hanging out, paired up. So the way that he paired up angels is the exact same way clownfish breeders pair up clownfish.
You put them together?
Start them out as juveniles, make sure they're both a little bit different in size, and you put them together. And with the pomacanthus, or with the holacanthus angels, it worked.
Wow.
The big determining factor was, don't make it so they have to work out who's the tough one. In fish terms, that means one should be slightly different in size than the other.
Yeah, that makes
sense. So about 10 years ago, I tried it in a 110-gallon aquarium. I tried to get a group of angels to live together. It worked for a while. Some of them turn into jerks. Some of them don't. And I think what happened is, it's got a lot to do with how African cichlid keepers crowd fish. If you get a crowd of big angels together, the aggression is spread out. They can't get a dominant fish. Or you do get a dominant fish, but there's plenty to keep lower in that hierarchy, and it works, and you can get groups of angelfish together. So the whole concept that I grew up with, that one angelfish per tank, throw that out the window, get them to pair up, do some experimentation. It works.
Yeah, I think it's probably notable to mention how unique and special that like pairing mechanism is for angels, because they do form true like collaborative pairs in a way that I can't think of another reef fish off the top of my head that genuinely will form like a pair that sticks together and works together. Even like clownfish, those are pairs of,
they're more like business partners.
Yeah, like exactly, business partners. They don't work together towards a common goal. They work because they need each other to get what they need to get done.
Now, I can think of an example, but it's different from what you're thinking of. Butterfly fish will form like pairs, but they're not like male-female pairs. What they're doing is they're taking turns like defending the territory so the other one can eat. So they can be any combination of sex on who what is in the pear. And I just love reading like the first scientific papers coming out on it. And they're like, I cannot figure this out. Like, why are there these male-male pairs doing this territory together? And it's like, it took them years to figure out, oh, it's because it's not like a breeding thing. It's just a territory thing.
I would almost argue that butterfly fish are the exception that proves the rule because they're pretty close to angelfish.
If someone could say the second most majestic group of fish, it might be butterfly fish.
Okay. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a pretty wild party on the reef.
Yeah.
Those relationships change and, you know, for two fish to stick together for that amount of time. And I think those pairs do last usually a pretty long time once they get together.
I think they'll take a new pair if they lose their partner, but I think that pairing is something they do until one of them isn't there anymore.
I don't know, maybe they could have a fight and divorce or whatever, but it's
that's
like
possible.
It's an actual coupling versus a matter of just convenience.
Yeah.
And that's not typical.
No, it's not.
So what tanks shouldn't have an angelfish in them?
Shark tanks.
Yeah.
Shark tanks in smaller than 20 gallons. But a 20-gallon tank? Atlantic pygmy angel?
Yeah. I think that's doable.
Okay. I was thinking, like, you said 20-gallon, and I'm thinking, like, coral beauty. I'm like, why would you do that?
No.
The Atlantic pygmy, I mean, that's the angel fish for just about everybody.
Yeah. Coral beauty, I'd say probably 40 minimum. That'd be mine. I would go more, but, like, if somebody asked me if they can do it in a 40, I would say, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The big angels... Anything in Pomacanthus or Holacanthus, you need to be in the 100-gallon range.
Yeah.
Pygalopides, you could probably do a 75 for Pygalopides. The Centropyge genus, just about all of them will fit in 75.
Yeah.
Down to 50.
Mm-hmm.
You could say all of them. Paracentropyge, there's all too much variation there. Genacanthus, 75 and up. Catadontopolis, 75 and up. Aplomyctes, 40 to 75.
I'd say LPS heavy tanks, extreme caution with any
high
angels.
Risk.
We're not going to put any sort of angel. I mean, you know, maybe I'll force you to put your money where your mouth is. Are we ever going to put any angel in with that priceless bubble coral we have?
I would try it with Atlantic pygmy angels. I would consider it with a coral beauty. And I would consider it with a potters.
Hmm.
Anything in Genacanthus. I would do a Bellus angel in there, a heartbeat.
Okay, those are the swallowtails we just talked about. The Genacanthus includes the swallowtails and those
Correct.
Others? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. The zooplankton eaters.
Correct.
Yeah?
Yep. I'd do those in a heartbeat.
Okay. But... Yeah, LPS heavy tanks, it's going to be risky with most angels. Anything other than that, I'm sure you could get one in as long as you're more than 20 gallons.
I would love to turn that 210, or someday, a someday tank would be a tank full of leather corals and mushroom corals and as many big angels as you could manage to get along.
Like yeah.
If you put yourself in a situation... where you start them all out at just the right life stages. And oh, by the way, some of the Pomacanthus angels, because their juvenile form is a cleaner form, they are extremely aggressive towards other angels that are cleaners. So juvenile Pomacanthid angels are actually a little harder to get along with each other than the other group, the other angels in the genus or in the family.
That makes sense. They look very similar.
Yep. Yep. Feeding. Angelfish are omnivores.
Yeah, and this is actually something that I've been thinking about a lot because I remember when rock beauties were kind of considered a hard fish to keep alive in their adult stage because in the juveniles, they are very easy to feed because they're pretty generalist, although they do seem to have some cleaning tendencies, but not obligate. As adults, they do definitely require some sort of like spongy material in their
diet.
You
have to have that, yeah.
And what's really nice about that is there are a lot of prepared foods these days that do provide that. Like the Korean angels, they are getting a frozen cube that has sponge in it because, well, that's what they need.
Yeah. Yeah. A pair of rock beauties is a someday. Which yeah. rock beauties actually would be the exception to the tank size for the Holacanthus group. Those guys max out at about 8 or 9 inches. You could do a 90.
Yeah.
That's probably one of my... I had to think about it. That's easily my favorite in that genus. They are such a personable fish. I knew one that would like he would spit water at you when he was hungry.
I have to go with a passer angel for my favorite in that genus, although it's hard to say that because I love rock beauties. But a passer angel fish is a really deep blue fish with a big, huge white slash on it, a big white mark. And that white mark, that blue and white, we talked about the blue and white color combination.
Yeah.
Adult passer angels are cleaners. And their favorite host, hammerhead sharks.
Nice.
And that's just cool.
That is yeah. very cool.
There are tons of videos on YouTube on it. If like no one believes us, like look it up.
Yeah. Sea of Cortez.
Look it up right now.
Hammerhead sharks. Actually, if you just Google Sea of Cortez hammerhead sharks, you will see pictures of passer angels cleaning hammerhead sharks there. You wouldn't have to Google the passer angel to see that.
I'm pretty sure there was a segment on it in like one of the Blue Planet specials.
Yeah.
There had
they
to have
get
been.
As far west as the Galapagos Islands. I don't believe they're found any further west than that. I know they're not in Hawaii. I had the privilege of seeing them off the coast of Costa Rica. And they are as incredible as you hope they would be.
That's, you know, I stand by my rock beauty, but I don't begrudge your very different answer.
I get it. Yeah. It's like, you know, somebody make me pick your favorite song. And there's too many very cool angelfish out there to like really say, okay. But if somebody said, you have to pick one, it would be a passer.
Well, and for me, like this discussion, if you're talking about your favorite, like I don't think for angelfish, I don't think about species. I think about individuals that I've known.
Yeah.
Ooh,
for me,
like
you know, yeah. when we talk about tangs, oh, well this one's the prettiest. This one's the, when I talk about angels, it's, I remember that guy. He was awesome. Yeah.
I mean, I guess that would be a great explanation of, I like rock beauties because I have fond memories of that individual rock beauty.
Right. Yeah. It's just sort of the type of fish that begs that sort of affection. Mm-hmm. Like you just love that one that you got the opportunity to know for a while. Yeah.
That makes all kinds of sense. I had a juvenile Chrysiris angel for a while that the personality in that fish was outstanding.
Yeah. I remember like the French angel that we sold to a close friend and customer that like we had for longer than we needed to have it. And it was, you know, that made the impression of how much I love French angels.
Right. Right. And he does have that, by the way, paired up very well with a queen angel. One other angel in the tank.
Yeah. He's the one who has the example of the group of angels living well together. That's a piece of advice that I think he might have taken from you that, like, it worked so well for
him.
That's
how you do it. He started out with the sure things mm-hmm. and a way to get them out. And I believe we put the queen and the French together here.
Yeah.
And then he divided a tank and put an emperor in the mix so they could see each other and not hurt each other. And I think after 2 days, he's like, I'm pulling a divider out. And those three angels could learn great.
Yeah, and for that particular guy to say in 2 days, this is fine, like, he's a cautious person.
He has the patience of a sloth.
Yes. So, and it just worked. It's beautiful. It's amazing. Those are awesome fish. They're true pets. They're so much fun to have around.
Yeah, I guess when it comes to like those type of personalities, like that Quran, the big Quran angel downstairs, he's really endearing to me.
He is. He's so sweet.
Because he is starting to recognize individual people,
mm-hmm.
and he gets excited.
They're that smart.
It's adorable to watch like a foot long fish be like, "Oh my god, like it's you."
It's you.
You guys are making it really hard for me to not say we should switch something over to an angelfish display.
I'm not going to argue against it.
They are such an incredible group of fish.
I literally had the thought the other day that like if that cichlid half circle, like you could build like a slope and he would hang up front and near.
I'm not hating that idea.
No, I'm saying we move the mixed reef over there and we build the 220 into the Angel tank. And honestly, you could do a tank with pulsing Xenia, green star polyp, 5 angelfish, and you wouldn't need anything else.
5 angelfish? Come on, Amy, reach for the stars. 10.
Depends on the tank. You can't do 10 1-foot angelfish in that tank. Unless you're doing water changes every day.
That's what I pay you for. So we should touch on Catadontopolis as a genus for a little bit, because I think that's an underrepresented group of fish in the hobby. They, for some reason, those guys are this like often strange combination of blue, black, and white with a little bit of yellow. Almost all of them in that group. Some of them have, they have varying degrees of hardiness, but they need to be in the hobby more. They don't get too big. You can keep them in slightly smaller tanks. They do have the personality. They're absolutely gorgeous.
What would be the fish in this group? Because I really know it not at all. What would be the one to look at? What is the one that's most available?
Or at least the most, like...
known?
I would say, like, the hardiest.
Yeah.
That's the question.
Yeah, the most aquarium-friendly.
Probably Personatus.
Okay. I'll look that one up.
And these are the swallowtails, right?
No, that's Xenacanthus.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, these are more of like a square-bodied angelfish from what it looks like. The maize angelfish is the common name for the Personatus.
Yeah, those guys are around. And then the black velvet. Those are pretty regularly available.
They're beautiful. They're very, they're dark. Like, that's a really cool color.
They tend towards a little deeper water.
Yeah, I really like the black velvet, which is the Melanosoma.
Yeah, and that one's pretty readily available.
That's
next time I see him, we'll get one in.
Yeah, that like deep black coloration, I think, is something that would show really well in like our reefs, which are very like kind of bright and light colors, mm-hmm. very blue light. That's something that's not going to be washed out by blue light, which some of those other colors are.
Not a ton of reef safe angels in this group. Like they like their coral.
They look like they do.
The Singapore angel is the one that one comes through as being on the inexpensive side and pretty regularly available. That is Mesa Lucas.
Sorry, I'm just smirking because like. These fish,
that's
just
cool.
On appearance, they lend themselves to being given like Sith names.
They do maybe have the
they
dark
look
side.
Yeah, they look like they come from the dark side.
Right. Like, can you imagine like naming one like
Darth Sidious?
I was gonna say like Darth whatever the species name is.
Ooh, that's a good idea. That's a good naming idea in general.
Yeah,
Darth Velvet.
There you go. Mm.
Yeah, that just
That sounds a little bit weird. A little iffy. Darth Velvet sounds like an adaptation I don't want to watch.
Darth Acheron you know. Just
so Aplomyctes is the only other group that we really haven't touched on, and one of the representatives from that group is the Bandit Angel. And to me, that is the perfect example of a rare fish that's expensive because it's rare.
Mm.
It's kind of cool. It's a pretty good-looking black and white fish, but it's not like as majestic black and white as a Moorish idol.
Mm.
The juvenile form is gorgeous. The adults, and again, that's another one of those that, what? My bandit angel is absolutely incredible. The gold flake angel and the flagfin angel are the two fairly common members of that group. Beautiful fish. The flagfin is a pretty readily available fish. It acts a little bit more like a centropyge than a paracentropyge. Its reef safeness is about like a moderately reef safe centropyge. They just get a little bit bigger. So we did need to touch on that group a little bit.
Yeah.
But there, that kind of runs through.
I know. The thing is, there's not that many other scientific ways I can talk about angelfish, just because there's so many, like, it's all anecdotal. Like, right. But I think maybe what we're just coming to is, like, find the one that you love and plan your tank around it, or decide you love this group and plan the tank around it.
I think that's probably a better attitude than trying one in your tank. I think seeing if one fits in your existing tank is okay, because it is a fish that you want to add towards the end.
Right.
Not a whole lot of fish want to pick on an angel.
Right.
And they are going to fit into a group and not necessarily be as welcoming of new fish into that group.
Right.
So seeing if one fits into your tank is okay, but do the research ahead of time.
And for a lot of you, if you don't have an angel in your tank, one will probably fit. It just might not be the exact one that you want, you know?
Sometimes it's hard to keep a juvenile emperor angelfish in the store because people walk in and go, oh, I want that.
Yeah.
And that's a 180-gallon tank.
Yeah, and it's a, you know, it's no LPS. It's right. Like, yeah, you want it. I want it too, but like, it's worth setting up a tank for.
Right.
Like, yep, for sure. It's hard to get a better centerpiece fish than pretty much any of these angels. Even the centerpiece in a smaller tank, that's a perfect centerpiece.
So there you have it. The personality, the color, the attitude, the hardiness.
Sorry, you said attitude, and then I picture like the juvenile crown angel being like, the toad, thank you very much.
Because he would.
So I guess to sum up, we've talked about an angelfish for so many different situations, so many different opportunities for somebody to fit one of those into their existing reef, or they are a fish that are worth designing a tank around.
Yeah, I agree.
And I would like challenge someone to maybe set up a species tank for just like angels, because there are few large fish that I feel like that could carry a multi-hundred gallon system on its own, but angelfish could definitely do it if you planned it like
in the same way that some of those large cichlids can.
Yeah,
the colorful, right, aggressive, right, fish that, yeah, set up your 125 for your flower horn, or set up your 125 for a regal angel.
Yeah.
Or a pair of regal angels.
That would be amazing.
So that's why I said, yeah, species tank.
If you designed a tank, and actually back to Mark Pedersen, he has, I don't remember what size it is. I believe it's a 120 with gorgonians and leather corals and mushroom corals and a pair of queen angels in it.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
That's pretty much exactly what I'm talking about, right, but scaled down to lemon peels.
It'd be perfect.
Yeah, that's like, we did the clownfish podcast, and I'm like, yeah, I could set up a tank for skunk clowns, and you know, just
now you want those lemon peels.
I do. Mm-hmm. If I were to set up a system, it'd probably be with a 75 with skunk clowns and a 75 with a pair of lemon peels and, yeah, plum together.
All right, so let's get a pair of lemon peels in here and see what happens.
Because I do love those fish.
They are so pretty. So there we have it. There is the discussion of the most majestic fish in the hobby. I know that's a big word, but I think we lived up to it.
Yeah.
Argue with me. Tell me what's wrong. Tell me there's no, this group of fish is better or prettier. No, better.
More majestic. You can argue better. I don't think you can argue more majestic.
You cannot argue more majestic. Somebody
you
do
can
it.
Try.
I was like, I'll happily argue that clownfish are better aquarium fish, but
majestic is not
majestic.
Something you can argue.
Look for more of these questions and answers on future podcasts. Look for us on Facebook, YouTube,
Instagram, Twitter. You can even email here, and I would love to hear some of your feedback. You can email podcast@watercolorsaquariumgallery.com if you've got any questions, feedback, or requests on what you'd like to hear us talk about, because we'd love to hear from you.
And in the meantime, have lots of fun and keep those hands wet.